You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. National news has the big spotlight, but it's local TV news that gets those close-to-the-ground regional and neighborhood stories that national TV just can't or won't cover. And people care. A Pew study from a year ago finds local news is more trusted than national news. 82% trust local news, 76% trust the national news. But the FCC is quietly making some moves that could change the face of local TV news and the way rural America gets its local news. Christopher Ali is an assistant professor in the Department of Media Studies at the University of Virginia. We're going to talk about a couple of rules, Christopher, that come from the earliest days of broadcasting based on something called the principle of localism, which means what?
Yeah, this is so important, and it's something we often forget about. Localism is the idea, in broadcasting at least, that local broadcasters, you know, our local television stations, our local radio stations, that they are required to in some way serve the community in which they are located. And oftentimes that goes to them providing a local news service. That oftentimes means them having local reporters in a local studio to be present in the community. I think there's a lot to be said sometimes, you know, when you're walking down your street and you notice, hey, there's my local anchor from the local Fox station, or isn't it awesome that the DJ at the local radio station is also, you know, hosting this local awards event. So it's about being present in the local community and offering programming that is reflective of the community in which you're operating. And that's the idea of localism.
Well, I can very well remember, I mean, I've been in this business since 1979, and I so well remember, you know, those early years when I was the news director of recording and submitting the documents of the programming we had done or the reports we had done, and the needs and list of those, the local needs of the area where the station was located. And they had to be on file so anybody could walk in and ask to see them.
Absolutely. These were called the public inspection files. And the reason these become so important is because of the First Amendment, local broadcasters can't be ordered what to air, right? We can't order a television station to do local news because that would be against their First Amendment rights. But what we can do is say, listen, in some way, you need to be responsible to your community. And in order for us to better understand this, you need to provide your viewers and the Federal Communications Commission with a log, a programming log of all the programs that you air that are responsive and reflective of your community, in some way help your community. And those are called the public inspection files.
And are those still in, because I moved away from having to do that. Is anyone still having to do that today?
Well, it's been a slow move away from the public inspection files. They moved to being hard copy files to digital copies, and now it looks like they're going to be done away with altogether.
Including having to do news, because my previous radio station that I was at, they just eliminated news, and they could.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because again, it's important to know that localism is a principle, it's a policy that we hope to follow, but it's really difficult to enforce it because you can't order a station to air certain programming. Mm. And so the best way that stations often felt that they could meet the localism requirement is to provide local news. And more, though, particularly on radio, local news isn't making any money. So stations are trying to find other ways that they can still say we're providing news and information and content reflective of the community, but not doing it through local news. And that, for me, for someone who studies local news, is a really big problem.
Yes. All right, let's dive into this first rule the FCC is proposing to do away with. It's called the main studio rule. What is it, and what would it mean if it's eliminated?
So the main studio rule was one of the hallmarks of localism. It's going back to the 1930s when the radio system was just getting started and radio started to look like, actually a lot like television looks like today, with national networks and local affiliates. And what the main studio rule said was that if you had a license to operate a radio station, the main studio, the main production studio, the main office had to be located within the major business center of the community. And the reason for that was because it was about visibility. It was about allowing local residents to hopefully have a little bit more input into the program. They could just stop by and say, hey, why don't we do this? It was also about encouraging local talent and making sure that the stations were hiring local people. And so all of this is wrapped up in the idea of the main studio rule. And that rule stood up until the 1980s when we started to loosen the rules just a little bit.
In what way?
Well, what we saw in the 1980s was, all right, you know, so you didn't have to be located directly in the community. Maybe you could be located just kind of anywhere your station signal reached, right? Now, station signals, they reached pretty far. So you could be just located anywhere within that, in that community, or within 25 miles of the main economic center of the town. So we start to see stations move a little bit away. Now, why would a station do this? Well, it's cheaper, right? Land is cheaper the further away you are outside of a city, right? And so you started to see television stations move out of their communities of license. They're still broadcasting. You know, of course, they're still committed to offering reflexive programming and giving local news, but suddenly they're just, they're farther away. And these rules got loosened again in the 1990s. That loosening said, okay, well, now the station could be located anywhere within the signal reach of the most powerful station in the community.
Hmm.
That meant stations could be located even farther. And what we started to see was sometimes stations would be located so far away from the community that they would be almost touching another market, another broadcasting market. And suddenly saw the idea that, okay, if we own two stations and they were somewhat, you know, in two neighboring communities, maybe we could get away with only having one station serving two communities.
And eliminate a lot of jobs.
And
bottom line is happy. Yeah. So so now this, the move would be to just eliminate the main studio rule?
Eliminate the main studio rule entirely. Now, again, you know, the flip side is, well, why does this matter? Why does it matter? Because most of us watch cable television anyways. Most of us use the internet and stream, and we're using Netflix. So what is the relevance of local television? But, Cindy, as you mentioned, the vast majority of Americans continue to get their local news and information from television. And this is particularly true for morning newscasts. Americans love watching morning local news way more so than any of the cable networks. So it's still relevant here. But what this could mean, if you take a state like Virginia, if you had a situation where you had one dominant station owner, right, that owns stations in a couple of different communities, what happens then if they say, well, we don't need a station in Charlottesville and Roanoke and Lexington and Richmond. We're just going to have one powerful station broadcasting to all of these communities. Well, what happens to the on-the-ground journalists? What happens to being able to see the anchor host the local fair? This stuff might sound quaint, but it's really important to humanize news, to humanize information, to humanize these kind of new technologies.
So considering Michigan's the largest state east of the Mississippi, we have a lot of people in Michigan in rural areas. So how do you see that impacting our state?
I mean, a lot of this is hypothetical. But if we look at what the newspaper, the local newspaper industry is doing, a lot of times with these large chains, we look at a chain like Gannett, right? Gannett might buy a ton of newspapers in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, we certainly, I'll jump right in and say we've seen this with the Detroit Free Press that Gannett owns, even having to the point where they just changed the online look and made it look like USA Today. It doesn't look like the Detroit Free Press anymore.
Exactly. So Gannett rolls out their USA network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they start centralizing production. So maybe instead of having a full-blown bureau in a community, they might just have a reporter or a stringer, right? Whereas before, it was a full-blown paper. Imagine if we translate this to television. You know, a company the equivalent of Gannett buys up a bunch of Michigan television stations. You know, the station in Grand Rapids, the station in Ann Arbor, and of course there's multiple. But and then they say, you know what, we don't actually need a station in Grand Rapids. What we need is just a reporter there. Or maybe we just need a reporter covering the region, and all we can do is we can just transmit all of our signals outside of Detroit, and they'll just reach different communities. So these are the implications for a state like Michigan, which has these pockets of populations and these rural communities, and because they're not going to pull the station from Detroit. They're not. Detroit makes a lot of money. What they're going to do is start chipping away at the stations in rural communities, and that could mean less jobs, less local reflection, and less stories being told about those communities.
And also then, this plays into the second rule we need to talk about, targeting, which is something called the UHF discount. Can you give us kind of a primer on what that is and why it matters if it's this UHF discount is restored?
The UHF discount is a technical issue. So I hope that your listeners will forgive me for 1 minute as I kind of get into some technical aspects.
Okay,
here.
Professor, take it away.
Well, you know, before the days of cable television, when broadcasters primarily used spectrum, right, radio frequencies to transmit their signals. So even on a television station, we'd have channels, right? We'd had channels 2 through 13, and we'd have channels 14 through 69. And those corresponded to different frequencies. Now, if you were a television station and you got channels between channels 2 and 13, now remember, this is before cable. So this is, you know, old school. you know, flipping the dial.
We baby boomers are with you, Chris. We got it. We remember that.
Those stations were really powerful because they were operating on very good radio frequencies. Those were operating on the VHF frequencies, mm-hmm. and they reached far and they were very clear. So that's channels 2 through 13. But if you got on channels 14 through 69, those were on the UHF band, and those signals were weaker and didn't go as far.
Yeah.
Why does this matter? Well, it matters because the Federal Communications Commission has an ownership cap. You cannot own, one company can't own stations who reach more than 39% of the population. And that's in order to keep monopolies at bay and to encourage a diversity of voices. So again, one company can't own television stations who, when you add up all of their populations in the different cities, can't amount to more than 39% of the population. How do they calculate that 39%? Well, if you're in New York City, and so you get 8 million people. 8 million people is whatever of 300 XYZ million people, and that's, you know, once they get to 39% of that, you've hit your limit. If you're broadcasting on a UHF station, so if you were broadcasting on channels 14 through 69, your population was cut in half because your signal didn't reach as far.
Sure.
So, again, if you were in New York, instead of counting for 8 million people, you'd count for 4 million. What does that mean? It allowed station ownership groups, you know, those companies that own television stations, to get bigger. They could own more so long as they kept buying in UHF stations. Are you following
me? Yep, absolutely.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. So, you know, advance until 2009, we switched from analog broadcasting to digital broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way in which our television sets received the signals from broadcasters. What it did mean, though, is it eliminated the difference between the VHF and the UHF signals, meaning that we didn't need to compensate companies anymore if they bought stations in the UHF band. It didn't matter. In fact, UHF is actually better because you have a better HD signal. That's awesome. So the FCC decides in 2016 to eliminate this UHF discount. So no longer, if you were on channels 14 through 69, would your population only count 50%? It would count for the whole thing.
Hmm.
Well, what does this mean? In this time, you had a bunch of companies who were gobbling up UHF stations that suddenly found themselves over and above the 39% limit. Companies like Ion Television, companies like Sinclair Broadcasting, which suddenly found that, you know, they might have to sell television stations in order to make sure they were within this cap.
Got it.
Right? And that ultimately they couldn't get bigger. And in the world of media, bigger is better. Companies always want to gobble up other companies. We've got multi-billion dollar mergers on the table right
yes,
now.
Yes, we do.
And so they petitioned the FCC, the current FCC, who just had a new chair appointed in January.
And the so FCC the Trump agreed. Era FCC is
the
what
Trump era FCC, yes, absolutely. And the Trump era FCC agreed with these broadcasters saying, you know what, we really should reinstate the discount. Now, what does this mean in terms of pragmatically for your listeners? Well, nothing in terms of what's going to be on your sets, but it matters who owns it, because you're going to start to see station ownership groups get bigger. So, for instance, a group called Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns 172 stations, which without the UHF discount could not buy another television network. They just couldn't. They're too big.
Yes.
Now, because the UHF discount is reinstated, they're going to buy up a company called Tribune Media.
That's right. And they're going to pay $4 billion for it.
$4 billion, right?
Yes.
So now they're going to add 42 stations to their 172 stations. So they're going to get bigger. Now, if we follow this path down to a potential conclusion, the UHF discount means bigger television station ownership groups like Sinclair, plus the main studio role means if you own more in one region, you have the potential to start centralizing production, to start regionalizing production, to start getting rid of your rural stations because you own so much. What you're looking for, you know, what economists would call economies of scope and economies of sale. How can we do more for less? Right? Why do we need an ad salesperson in Grand Rapids and in Ann Arbor and in Detroit when we can just have one selling for all three stations? Why do we need a local news anchor in all of these? Why don't we just have one Michigan News in Detroit?
And therefore
less localism.
Yeah. So what you're saying is this could really hurt local viewers seeing their concerns and their stories represented on their local newscasts.
Absolutely, this could. And this is, I do want to remind everyone that this hasn't happened yet. These rule changes have gone through, but what I'm describing hasn't happened. But this is the concern for those of us who are invested in studying and understanding localism, which is that when we keep chipping away, we start losing these local voices, these local stories that, you know, may not matter in New York or even Detroit, but certainly matter to the folks in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And are valid and are worthy and need to be told. And this is some of my concern, A, when the SEC does this, and B, when it doesn't get a lot of publicity, because then there's not an opportunity to really have an open conversation about the value of changing these rules.
And really, is there anything that individual viewers can do to influence what the FCC, the direction the FCC is going?
Well, you know, that is a great question, and that's often a question that frustrates my students, is what can we do? And the easiest thing is, well, the easiest and the hardest is if you go to the FCC website, they have a whole list of all their dockets that are open. And the public is allowed to submit comments to every single docket that's open. The challenge is finding out what's open and, you know, reading enough to develop an opinion on it. But it is doable. We saw this with net neutrality. Millions and millions and millions of Americans have filed to the Federal Communications Commission in terms of net neutrality, both the time that's going on right now and 2 years ago when they were debating it before. So there is precedent for this. And I do think that Americans, you know, are really passionate about local media. They're really passionate about the local news and information. And I say this having studied small town newspapers all over the country. I wrote a book on local media policy that just came out. So I'm well versed in the importance of localism to the American viewing public. And I think this could be an opportunity to be, you know, start a rallying cry and say, how much do we value local news? And if we do value it, it's time to make our voices heard.
Christopher Ali is an assistant professor in the Department of Media Studies at the University of Virginia. His latest book is Media Localism, The Policies of Place. And it really has been eye-opening to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.